Strug in the building.
It's Coach Hoggins.
DJ Greg the Hammer in the building.
Cheese is here. I'm here, y'all.
It's Coach's Office Podcast, episode
64. Oh, I got Edwin Mulitalo.
Oh.
That's a good one.
I got my O-line coach in high school in at Frostburg, number 64, Coach Greg Hoggins.
Oh. Hey, son.
Yeah, I got to holler.
Yo, fuck y'all, yo. Because I don't have nobody right now. I'm stuck right now.
I don't know no 64s either, but the Google machine to help me. 64.
We need to back in like the 50s, the 50 numbers.
I don't even know. That shit was easy. 64 is significant in anything. What is 64 significant in?
Me? The fuck?
Come on, Jesse. What's your phone say?
I mean, I feel bad for cheating, but
you gotta do what you gotta do.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Now who we got?
Somebody. I mean, shit.
There's gotta be. I know it's one. At least one NFL Hall of Famer with
that wore 64.
That wore 64. It's gotta be one.
Oh, look. 64.
What you got? What we got?
Somebody from the Packers. Oh, Randall McDaniel wore 64.
Randall McDaniel.
Oh man, he was awesome. Let's see who else wore 64.
Played for the Vikings, right?
Played for the Vikings. And you know who else wore 64? Some white Packers. Dude from the Packers. this white dude.
When he wore 64, was all.
This guy. Whoever he is.
That's not, what's the guy's name?
He played in the Ice Bowl.
Played in the Ice Bowl, yeah.
I don't know why they don't show his name, though.
No. Oh, that's 63. 64.
That's when they were just a team.
What
no individuals?
They
don't
even show his name.
Let me see. Unless
my shit is just like,
we gotta see.
But Randall McDaniel definitely wore 64. I remember him. Randall McDaniel was big as hell with Minnesota. I remember him.
All right, while we're looking for another 64, let's go ahead on with the football news. So the big topic of the day or of the week has been Texas owner Bob McNair making the statement, "We can't have the inmates running the prison."
Fuck him.
Fuck him. That's some bullshit. I mean, that's not even... To me, it's expected. I just didn't expect it to come out.
Right.
That's what I was surprised about.
I just like when they say dumb shit like that, so I could just know.
So,
that's how you feel.
So the funny thing is, Dwayne Brown said this week that he's not shocked by it at all because he heard him say things like this before.
I'm sure.
And he was like, "I'm not shocked by it." And the problem is now, this is a league owned by white guys that are 70 plus for the most part. Mm-hmm. Let's say 60 just to be a genuine range. But Bob McNair is what, 80 something?
He looked like it. He probably in his 50s.
He grew up in a culture where their segregation was still real. Mm-hmm. He went to segregated schools, you know what I'm saying? He made millions off the backs of poor people, you know? So that's how he truly feels.
Right.
You know, and now that, because of social media and 24-hour news coverage, their feelings are getting out. He don't know how. He don't really believe he said nothing wrong.
Exactly.
And it's crazy because people were defending it. Like, you just don't understand the business mind. It wasn't anything racial or anything like that. That's what I've seen a couple people were saying. But no, it's totally racial.
Absolutely.
It's all the way racial. It's to learn, you guys got to stay in your place and be happy that we're allowing you to make the pennies you're making compared to the dollars we're making.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And the NFL has a serious problem right now. They have an image problem. And they better hope these players don't get together and smarten up and say, "Hey, without us, they don't have anything." Mm-hmm. And let's start demanding and saying and doing certain things that's going to piss them off. Because then they'll really be in trouble.
Right. When is the NFL Players Association president contract?
He needs
to get the fuck out of here.
Right.
Because I haven't heard nothing from him yet.
This shit is wild, man.
I don't get how D. Smith isn't on the radio, on the news, on ESPN, every minute calling these owners out on this bullshit. Like, they have to have the worst union of all unions. Imagine if a supervisor said something like that to a union worker on a construction site. Their union rep would be all in their ass.
Yep.
Now, we're talking about $1 billion being changed, and their union rep isn't on the front lines talking about how this is the bullshit.
Right.
Like,
it was absolute bullshit.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
I'm just so proud of DeAndre Hopkins for walking the fuck
out. Yeah, DeAndre Hopkins was like, I'm out of here. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy, like, the blatant disrespect and how people feel about you. At some point, as a man, you just got to be like, you know what? I'm tired of this shit. You know, and I'm going to make my statement one way or another. And this peaceful thing, this walking out and all that, but until somebody heard these people's pockets but on kickoff at 1 o'clock and they just sit in the locker room, then they're going to keep on doing this.
My thing is, how the hell was only 10 people out of a 53-man roster that walked out? Like, that's crazy to me, yo. When it's that serious and it's that public and it's that blatant and it's such an important issue right now, less is more, man. When you don't walk out that facility with DeAndre Hopkins, you're pretty much taking a stand. Did you agree with the fuck Bob?
Right, or you just don't care enough.
Yeah,
to,
that's the crazy to me.
And what I think it is I really believe these players are of an age where especially the younger players first in the league, they didn't have parents that told them the same type of stories that your parents told you or my parents told me, because they're younger and their parents grew up when desegregation was gone, and or they grew up in an area where it was nothing but themselves, people that looked like them. And then you gotta realize too, it's like, I remember Charles Barkley, somebody said this about Charles Barkley. They was like, Charles Barkley doesn't understand what real white people mean to black people, because he's always been that selective star. So they've always catered or said things around him where he feels like, well, if they treat me like this, I don't understand why they're not treating the rest of y'all like this. And I feel a lot of these players had that syndrome of, you know, well, they treat me good for the most part. There's always going to be some people that say something. And I just hope a player, an important player, wakes up and realizes, you know what, I need to be on the other side of history of this thing. You know, somebody needs to just be like, when we look back on these last couple years of NFL and the turmoil, who's going to be the guy besides Cap to be like, you know what, I sacrificed it to talk about that. And that's something that these players got to look in the mirror and realize. You know, like, you guys have a lot of power. Just look at the NBA. You know what I'm saying? I know the NBA and NFL, the structure is a little different, but if you get a couple of these superstars to be like, hey, I ain't coming out or I ain't doing this, look how quick the NBA made an owner sell his team to keep the face.
Didn't the racist ass owner said the idiom all wrong and shit? He said we can't have the inmates running the prison. When the shit is quoted as saying we can't have the inmates running the asylum.
Right.
Meaning
we can't have no crazy motherfuckers running
the prison. They ain't had nothing to do with fucking social, economic shit. I mean, it's just crazy, man.
And it's starting, like, every week, which more can come up? You know what I'm saying? Like, we hear from Baltimore, so we watch the Ravens on Thursday. You mean to tell me them quarterbacks that played for Miami are better than Colin Kaepernick? And as a fan, you need to start questioning, like, if this is about winning, why am I supporting you and you're not doing the best thing to help this team win? So when people talk about the winning aspect and the team aspect, that's bullshit. And this year has proven it's bullshit. Because if you care about winning, there's a quarterback out here who we know is at least top 64. Every team got at least two quarterbacks.
Right.
You mean to tell me it's about winning, but you're not going to have this top guy on the team? We playing quarterbacks who guys don't even know their name? They brought a dude in for a workout. I had to Google who he was. I never even heard of him in college or anything. Like, it's becoming real frustrating.
But he has the measurables. What makes me mad is that the owner came out with a weak-ass apology. Like, he didn't mean what the fuck he said. But he only said that shit because the shit came out. And then I went to go Google the statement that he made, and every fucking link is his apology. Like, they trying to cover that shit up. Like, oh, it wasn't what everybody's trying to make it to be. There's no racial tension.
And he's trying to say he's talking about the players.
Right, I'm talking
shit
about the NFL. What do you say? The office or something like that?
Yeah, the front office.
That's a weak ass shit, man.
Cover your ass.
Them big wigs and these fucking, yo, these people just say shit and don't expect any consequences. Like you ain't gonna get punched in the fucking mouth. I hate that shit.
The only reason it even came out is because when they had the owners meeting before the players got there, it was only owners and executives, and the only black executive, former player Troy Vincent, he stepped to him about that dumbass shit.
Mm-hmm.
It would have never came out if Troy Vincent wasn't in that room.
Right.
They would have never came, because he would have said the same thing.
Right. And that's the fucking problem, because it took him to say, well, all these owners around, they said, we was listening to one show on XM or something, and they were saying that the other owners were cringing as he said it, but nobody said anything.
Right.
That's the fucking issue.
Right.
That's the issue. When shit like that happened, they sit there and be silent and then wonder why black people are taking action.
Right.
Like, the fuck you mean? You ain't saying nothing.
So
when we say something, we wrong.
So Troy Vincent had to literally go at his boss, because he got 32 bosses, and he went at one of them. It was like, this is some bullshit, and walked out the room.
It
was on some, basically some when he tried to apologize to him, it was on some fuck you shit, and that's how it leaked out, because it was reporters in the hallway when he was trying to issue that apology.
Mm.
And you know what else? Look, right, I be having a lot of issues with stuff, and I'm gonna tell you what else I have a major issue with, and I don't care how nobody feel about it, right? They love to pump up respect this military and respect the flag. I'm gonna be 110% honest with you. I grew up in a time when my father was drafted, my uncles were drafted. Fuck that military. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you why I said that. When they got drafted and snatched from their homes, they weren't even enough. They couldn't even sleep in the same barracks as them white folks. Mm-hmm. And this ain't hundreds of years ago.
Right.
We talking about they only integrated in Vietnam. You know what I'm saying? I used to hear stories about how my father and friends would come, and they would talk about how they would give the white boys shaving cream and give them razors, and the black boys had to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So when everybody's talking about, oh, we're disrespecting the troops, that same organization a couple years ago ain't give a fuck about what them boys who playing on that field look like. And this is fact. When they started this, you know, military, you can get your mortgage, first-time hires, and you can get your service. If you were in the military, you can get your mortgage rates from mm-hmm. them. Blacks couldn't get it.
Right.
That was a stipulation. So you letting these white boys, this ain't no 100 years ago. We talking about 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
where most of these kids' grandparents that's playing in this league went through. They talk about, oh, respect the military, when the military didn't respect the people that made you. You know what I'm saying? These dudes couldn't eat with these people. They were in separate barracks. They put them on the front lines to fight, but they couldn't even fight with the white boys.
Experimented on them. Sent their ass home so they
could spread it. And this is what kills me. No one talks about this. Like, this is ancient history. When we bring up things, it's, oh, why are we always negative? But they love to talk about history, but they love to not talk about that history.
Because that's not what America
is about.
So you
want me to stand for a flag where I have to hear stories about my own father and uncle talk about they had to wait to eat. They had to wait to get their second-rate guns. They had to wait to get on the back of the airplane with the same people who were fighting for the same country. You know what I'm saying? Yep. These people not 100 years old. Yep. Like, my mother, this is what I told a white person the other day. You love your grandmother? And they'd be like, oh, I love my grandmother. I said, well, my mother's grandmother was born in slavery. So tell me how her attitude should be towards you.
Right.
Her whole demeanor, their whole demeanor was like, oh my God. Because they think it's so far ago.
Right.
My mother's grandmother was born into slavery. At the tail end of it, but she was still born from slaves.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So they always let it tell you, you shouldn't feel this way, you shouldn't talk like this, or you're always bringing up negativity. But they love to talk about these generals from the South. And they love to talk about these monuments. And this president talking about, well, what's next? Are they going to take down George Washington and take down Thomas Jefferson? Fuck them too.
Absolutely.
They own people that look like all of us. Thomas Jefferson raped people that look like our mother because he could. So, yeah, take their statues down. Yep. Statues are something that are put up of people who you should be supposed to be proud of. And no one's saying this in the media. And this is my outlet to say it, so I'm going to say it.
Say it, baby.
Fuck that shit, man.
Preach.
You talking about, oh, don't take down these civil rights here, these Civil War monuments. It's our history. History belongs in books and museums. Statues are for people who deserve to be praised. Anybody, first of all, they're traitors. That's why white people love to tote the line.
If you love this country so more, why are we celebrating traitors?
Right.
The South broke away from the Union, started the Confederacy, started their own army, their own president, and we praise them for being traitors? Imagine if one of us did that right now. That's one of the few things that you still can, you can get hung for in this
country.
We
couldn't even have our own area. Black Wall Street was burned the fuck down because they had their own shit.
And it's just so, and I hate that every time we get on here to talk about sports, something we all love, something that people love to say brings everybody together, but it really doesn't. Sports don't bring everybody together. The history of sports is, oh, we're going to let you play because it's just a better product. When blacks was playing and black folks had to stand up, everybody knows the story about when USC came here to play Alabama and beat Alabama ass. All them black folks were outside the stadium watching them on top of the hill. You know, so how is sports bringing us together? You know, I go to an NFL game. It's 80% blacks playing. It's 90% whites in the stands. So is it really bringing us together? And now with this 24-hour news media and with all these cameras in your face, we knowing the true feelings about people and how these people feel about their players. They not their players. They treat them like cattle. They treat them straight like cattle. That's how they feel about them. And for these players not to stand up and fight against that, man, it's becoming frustrating. And I know it's easy for someone like me who doesn't have anything to lose to say this. And I know that's what people are going to say. But I just wish one of these players would want to be on the right side of history and be like, you know, hey, I'll be another cat. You know, stand up and help this man. He sacrificed everything to get this talked about. And it's just becoming frustrating that every day this is all we have to talk about. But it's something that we've dealt with every day.
Right.
You know, it's just that we're lucky that we live in a neighborhood where, and we work and live where it's mostly us. So we're in a comfort zone. Mm. You guys coach at a school that's over 90% black. Your principal's black, you know. So the comfort zone is definitely there. But for the rest of the 15 million of us, or how many of us that's out there that don't live in that, they have hard times. And I feel sorry for them, man. It's crazy.
Yep. Everything you said was true as a mother, man.
The military. Military wouldn't even let your grandparents go and get a loan, a VA loan to buy a house, but respect the military.
Right.
Ain't nobody up. How come, I wish a player next time they say respect the military be like, well, how come my grandfather who got drafted couldn't get a VA loan like the white boys could? I'm supposed to respect that?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then they love to throw in things like, oh, get with the welfare and all that. When welfare first started, we were excluded from it.
Exactly.
That's the history that they don't love to talk about.
And we're not even
the
largest portion of people that even use it.
When welfare started, they said, okay, but you can't give it to sharecroppers and you can't give it to maids and people that work in the home. Because who did that? Black people. And the white people didn't want us to have no handout any type of way. So it's a history of them hating on us. And these dudes who don't understand that and who have a voice and aren't fighting against it, this ain't stuff that happened hundreds of years ago.
Right.
We talking about less than a century ago. We talking about less than 60 years ago.
Yep.
It's just frustrating. But and I hate that it's taking over. But I've always was taught, that football is a game of life, right? The great Lennon Hart told me that shit. The great Lennon Hart. But he right about that. And football is a game of life. And you see how it's coming into real life now. How real life issues on the news every day is coming into our sports.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, they're the ones who's keeping it up. Because they're the ones who having slip-ups talking about the inmates can't run to prison. And like you said, it's supposed to be the asylum. Mm-hmm. But he of the prison. Right. You know what I'm saying? That's how they look at us. And it's just getting frustrating.
Yeah, man. I'm just glad it came out.
Yep.
I'm glad Troy Benson was in that room because we would have never heard about him.
I'm going to make you stand for a flag. These people supposed to be Christian beliefs, right? They talk about their Christian beliefs, but yet they praising a flag? When that's what the number one or number two commandment? You ain't supposed to honor and praise no being or no symbol?
You want
to
set their own?
You know, they pick and choose their own rules, but then get mad at us when we want to speak about it. And that shit is just aggravating.
I'm just glad we got the outlet to get that off our chest.
Yeah, sure.
Welcome into the Coach's Office. This is what we talk about. I'm sure they talk about it in every Coach's Office.
Yep. It gets talked about in Coach's Offices. It definitely does. Especially, and you know, we've been in a situation where our teams that we played on and coached on are 99% black. You know, every once in a while you might get a Latino or something that play that's a kicker or something. But for the most part, I've always played on football teams except on all-star teams where everybody was black. I went to black college. 99% of the roster was black. My high school, 99%. You guys coach at 99% black rosters. I hope we can find a coach that could come on this show that's got a split roster or 60-40 white and black and ask them, like, what's the issues you guys are having right now? Because it's different than our experience. It's got to be. Because everybody in our locker room looks the same, comes from the same background. So they have mostly the same type of feelings.
Right, right, right.
How do you address, I wonder with these coaches who have diversity, how do you address it or do you just ignore it? Mm-hmm. And if you ignore it, how is it fair to that 40% or even 60% if it is minorities, blacks? How is it fair to them that you won't address it? You know, how do you deal with it?
Right, that's a good one.
Yeah, I'm going to call somebody and hopefully get somebody who's not afraid to speak their mind to talk about it. Because I want to know. You know, that's not our situation. We all coach kids that look like us. We're all around kids that look, think, talk, listen to the same type of music. And it's an issue. You know, it's got to be a serious issue. And I hope we can get somebody on here to talk about how they handle it.
All right, so we're going to wrap up the football news and go ahead and ask the coaches to where we're interviewing Growth of a Game, President Travis Brody.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this week we have a special guest coming to us live directly from Skype, Mr. Travis Brody. Travis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
Can't complain. So, Travis, just give a little brief introduction and bio of yourself, what you do, you know, the company you represent, and all that good stuff.
Thanks. I'd be happy to. So, my name is Travis Brody. I'm a sports professional based in Brussels, Belgium. I originally came over to Europe as what we call an import player, as a quarterback to play for a team in Brussels, Belgium. And really was very fascinated by the development of the sport and really how you know, how prevalent the game was at this at that point, and was very interested in potentially pursuing you know, business opportunities and consulting opportunities out here. And after 3 years, I wound up moving back to California. Started working for a sports marketing firm that was owned by Warren Moon, the Hall of Fame quarterback. So I worked for Warren for a couple years as his vice president of business development with his firm, and eventually spun off my own consulting firm. And we basically have been specializing in the development of American football in Europe. So we do whatever we can to help promote the sport over here. We help teams and retailers access American football equipment that is, you know, imported from the U.S. We also organize skills camps throughout Europe, and then lastly, we have a website where we publish content on the growth of the sport, and that is the Growth of a Game. It's www.growthofagame.com.
Wow! So, how was working with Warren Moon?
Yeah, let's start with there. How was that?
Amazing. You know, he's such an interesting guy. The fact is, you know, his perseverance is the thing that really appealed to me the most. I ironically grew up a big fan of Warren and was always amazed with his poise in light of the fact that he had faced so much doubt over the course of you know, his early years. Mm-hmm. You know, he was all everything coming out of high school in LA, and went to Washington on a full ride, had an amazing career there, and also won the Rose Bowl at Washington. And when he was, you know, set to go out to you know, to the NFL draft, he had a lot of teams asking him to switch positions. You know, at the time, you know, it was not really considered feasible to have a black quarterback in the NFL, which was really absurd, but at this time, it was that was just the kind of archaic thinking that was taking place. And so they tried to move him to linebacker, they tried to move him to receiver, to DB. And, you know, he said, look, I want to play quarterback. He wound up going to the CFL. He won 5 Grey Cups in 6 seasons. And I believe it was 93 he came out of the CFL and became the highest paid free agent at the time, signing with the Houston Oilers, and really had an incredible career. But, you know, just goes to show his persistence is incredible. Just a great man and incredibly humble despite, you know, all the things that he's overcome and how much he's achieved.
Okay, so as far as your company begins, like, trying to spread American football in Europe, what is the actual landscape of American football in Europe at this time?
Well, it's pretty shocking, but there's roughly around 1,500 men's adult teams currently in Europe. And then if you factor in an additional roughly 200 women's teams and, you know, let's say an untold number of youth programs as well, the sport is really growing very rapidly. And if you compare that to, let's say, about 20 years ago, there were roughly 400 teams out here. So, you know, the advent of live streaming and, you know, just the prevalence of access to NFL games and college games in the U.S. has made the sport more well known over here, and you know, the popularity has followed.
Wow.
Hey Travis, how you doing? This is Coach Trump.
How you doing, Coach?
Do they play American football in high school over there?
They do. It's a little different structure in terms of the way that sports are done in Europe. You know, in the States, we have a very streamlined process. Everything goes from, you know, let's say Pop Warner to high school to college to professional. But over here, it's all kind of one and the same. So you start with a club and you essentially can stay with that club for your entire life. Wow. So you can maybe start out playing the game, you know, let's say in your teens. And you know, you move up from, let's say, under 15 to under 17 to under 19, then eventually you're playing on the senior program, which is 18 and over, and then you stay with that senior program, you know, for as long as you're playing. And so it's a little different structure. I think in terms of youth development, we're a bit better in the U.S. in terms of youth development, but I think that the amateur game is actually a little bit more developed over here in the sense that it's very inclusive. And so, you know, typically for most players, you know, if they don't get a college scholarship, they're going to stop playing at 18. If they don't make the NFL, they're going to stop playing at, you know, 22. But over here, it's a little different in that structure. It's really encouraged to play well into your 30s. And, you know, there's a lot of support for that, which we don't really have as much in the U.S. in terms of, let's say, semi-pro development.
Mm-hmm. So, like, how does the European game compare to, like, the American game? You know, like, are there any rule differences, anything different in both games?
That's a good question. In terms of rule differences, there are no differences. Most leagues play under the NCAA rules, which are really the most consistent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they follow all the NCAA rule changes each year. They are really good about that. The only, you know, let's say major difference you would see would be that oftentimes teams over here are playing on soccer fields, okay, as opposed to, you know, really developed American football fields. So what happens is a soccer field is typically roughly around 110 yards long.
Right.
And so because of that, they have to cut out 10 yards at some point in the field. So they take out, they usually take out 10 yards in the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. So an actual regulation field is 90 yards plus the 10 yard end zone. So it winds up being 110 yards as opposed to 120.
Okay.
How much pushback does American football get from soccer over there? As opposed to trying to recruit kids to switch sports, basically?
Well, that's also a great question. The fact is that soccer is still very much king over here. You know, in most countries, it dominates the headlines, certainly 90 to 95% of the news, let's say sports news coverage. is attributed to soccer. And so American football, you know, really struggles to get that sort of notoriety at this point. And it's usually kind of the diehard fans that are following the sport. But it's very common for American football teams to go after players who maybe are a little bit jaded by soccer. They don't like the sort of political nature of the sport where, you know, it's kind of like nepotism or, friends of friends, sons of friends, you know, get more playing time than others. And so, that tends to happen where a lot of players kind of leave the sport as a result of getting frustrated by that. And then you add in the factor of American football being a much more inclusive sport. You know, you take a look at, let's say, soccer, right? All these soccer players are going to be roughly the same build. They're all going to be, you know, anywhere from, let's say, 5'8 to 6 foot. Mm-hmm. They're all thin and they can run about, you know, 10 miles a game. Yeah, exactly. You know, you take a look at basketball players, the vast majority of, you know, basketball players and NBA, you're going to have to be, you know, minimum 6'5, 6'6 to even have a shot to even make it. Mm-hmm. But in American football, it doesn't function that way. You can be any size, any height, any weight, any level of speed and athleticism, and there's a spot for you on the team. And that's what makes the sport so special. So what happens then to big guys, right? Guys that are, you know, 6'4", 6'5", and they're, you know, 260, 270 pounds. Right. You know, they don't have an opportunity to go play soccer. Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes rugby isn't particularly prevalent in a lot of countries over here, and so as a result, American football is really the best fit for them, and that's what makes it so interesting.
Okay.
Travis, what about the whole, you know, over here in America, the CTE and the brain injuries are a real big deal? How is that? Is that even a thought over there with the players playing American football?
It is. I don't think that it is to the same prevalence. Of course, we don't get the same news coverage over here about, you know, let's say the CTE and concussion issues. But I think in general, you know, the public is pretty well informed about it. I think that there's a sort of realistic nature, a realistic perspective taken on it, which is that team sports are dangerous in general. And so you have to know that going into it, whether you're playing, you know, football, rugby, soccer, basketball, injuries happen, collisions happen, and that's unfortunately going to be part of the game. And so I think that they're aware of it, but I don't think there's quite the dramatic reaction, perhaps, that's kind of taken place in the U.S.
Okay. So... are there many American coaches? American coaches coaching abroad?
There are tons. Yeah, it's really tough to evaluate that number. I think certainly several hundred are here in Europe at the moment coaching. I would say, you know, if I had to guess, somewhere in the range of 500, all across various countries in Europe. It's really common for teams to bring over American coaches to really help elevate the level of play and bring their knowledge and experience.
Right. Okay, so those coaches, what can they expect out of a contract if they decide to coach in Europe?
It's pretty straightforward. There's always a few key points in each contract that are very standard. One is that the team will always pay for round-trip flight for the coach. They'll also provide provide accommodation in some form. They'll also take care of insurance, local transportation, such as either access to a car or public transportation pass for, you know, bus, tram, metro. They'll also provide some sort of meal plan, either, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3 meals a day at a local restaurant. And then lastly, they'll include some form of salary. And that salary really ranges. I think for coaches, typically standard can be anywhere from 500 to 2,500 euros, which is, you know, roughly the same as the dollar at this point. And, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot particularly, but the fact is that, you know, all the basic amenities and things like that are covered. So if you're not paying for accommodation, you're not paying for transportation or meals and things like that. You know, everything you make is just kind of spending money.
Right, right, right. Okay, so what advice could you give coaches looking to actually coach abroad?
Well, there's a few different ways you can go. I think the best way right off the bat is a website called Europlayers. It's www.europlayers.com. That's Europlayers.com. And Europlayers has been around for years. I think they've been around something like 15 to 20 years. And the website is essentially a social media platform that links coaches and players with European teams that are looking to place guys. And that way you can get in touch with them directly and you know, kind of talk about your experience. You can create a profile which lists your resume. You can, you know, put your stats on there and photos and things like that. And it's a great service. As a matter of fact, it's the service that I used to originally come over to Europe, and I think it's really really invaluable. If you want you know, a little bit more of a personalized service, there's other sort of recruiting programs that will help, you know, serve as your agent and be a little bit more hands-on with you. One of the ones that we recommend is an organization called Pro Hunt. I believe it's worldprohunt.org. And you know, they're a great organization that helps helps place coaches and players with teams that they have relationships over here with in Europe.
Okay. Now, for the past few years, the NFL has been having NFL games actually in Europe. So, how has that impacted how has that impacted your company and the goal you're trying to achieve over in Europe?
I think it's impacted us in a really positive way. I think the more exposure for the sport, the better. Mm-hmm. And it's really unique how the NFL organizes the games over here in Europe. So they've been hosting NFL games in London since 2007, and originally they intended to just do, you know, kind of one game 1 year in London, maybe the next year they do Berlin, then they do Mexico City. Mm-hmm. But the game was so popular, it sold out in a few weeks. And they just decided to come back year after year, and then they started going from one to two to three, and now this year I believe they're doing four games. Mm-hmm. And they sell out every game. Wow. And even with, I mean, you know, even some of the less popular teams that you think wouldn't be a hot ticket, the fact is that there's plenty of, you know, no offense, there's plenty of Cleveland Brown fans, you know, over here, or you know, let's say Jacksonville Jaguar fans or whatever it is, some teams that you would think wouldn't necessarily be the immediate hot ticket. Mm-hmm. There are loyal fans to these teams. And so, you know, let's say if the Browns are playing in London and it's the first time they've ever played there, Browns fans will come in from all across Europe and go to that game. And the NFL structures the game almost like a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. In the sense that it's really about the kind of grand nature of the event. You know, they make it like a spectacular kind of like a spectacle, really, in terms of how they market it, the event-like nature of it. And so they put more energy and time into it than they would a typical NFL game in the States. And so, you know, it's really an experience for the people that get a chance to go to these games. And oftentimes they're once in a lifetime experiences. So to get back to your question, I think that having that type of exposure, you know, in the UK and in and around Europe has been a really positive thing for our company and for anybody involved in American football in Europe.
Travis, with the success of the NFL coming over there year after year, do you foresee American colleges and universities or the NCAA promoting and trying to bring American football over there from the college game?
Can you repeat that again real quick?
Like, do you foresee like a big school like an America, like Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, do you foresee those universities or the NCAA trying to pry them over there to put the American college platform over there in Belgium or Europe?
I don't know if it's ever going to become, you know, necessarily as prevalent, but I do think that there are some college teams over here, in particular the UK has a comparable system to what we do in the States. Turkey, Germany to some extent, France to some extent also have college sports programs. And it really, I think, has an opportunity to grow, but I don't think it'll ever rival the same level that it is in the States as a result of, you know, I mean, really, if you think about it, the college game has really become in many ways like a professional organization. You know, the level of play is so advanced and so developed, and the level of support for these teams is so prevalent that I think it would be really difficult to mirror that.
Hello, Travis. Hi, my name is Jesse Hayes, and I was just in the room listening to you. And
hey, Jesse.
I had a question. I know you you played college football at Occidental. So how would you compare, you know, the experience of, you know, playing college football to you playing over in Europe? And because I personally had some buddies who, when they finished playing, went over to Europe and played in years in a couple leagues over there, and they expressed to me how they enjoyed the experience. They got to see a new culture, how the people accepted them. So just on your personal perspective, how was that transition to go over there and play football?
It was amazing. I really enjoyed moving to Europe and getting an opportunity to really view the sport played, you know, far away from home at a different level, with a little bit different flavor. And I thought that was really fascinating. I think that, you know, if you come over here with an open mind, which is that, you know, as a coach or a player, if you're coming over to Europe, you're going to be, you know, asked to help develop the sport. You're going to be, you know, asked to, you know, to be there for extra practices, for youth program, you know, practices and so on. You'll be asked to meet with sponsors and things of that sort. So it's pretty cool to help really develop the sport at a ground level. And I think just the unique nature of being in Europe and having the opportunity to travel around to so many great countries in a you know, short radius is really cool. And, you know, we don't have the prevalent differences in cultures that Europe does in such a short radius. I think that's what's really cool. You know, you can you can be in another country in a matter of hour and a half driving, and you can fly pretty much anywhere in Europe under 2-2.5 hours. So having the opportunity to really connect with people over here and learn about their cultures, learn new languages, is just a unique experience.
So I'm sorry, how long has your company been around?
We've been around for about 4 years now.
4 years. Okay, and you partnership with any other companies like the NFL, like when they come to Europe or anything like that?
We have a good relationship with the NFL UK office.
Okay.
We don't do anything necessarily directly with the NFL. I think we have, let's say, comparable ambitions in some regard, but, you know, the NFL is really focused in particular on expanding the NFL. And they're trying to expand the level of interest in the league itself, whereas our organization has really been focused on developing an interest and passion for American football at a grassroots level. And so, whereas they're kind of trying to create more fans, we're more focused on development of the sport itself from a grassroots level, and ultimately, you know, have more and more of these players have an opportunity to go, you know, perhaps play in the States, go play in the NFL, things like that. And you're starting to see that more and more. There's roughly 15 European-born players currently in the NFL right now. We had the first ever European player that was drafted directly from a European league who had never played in the States before, Moritz Boehringer, who played with the Minnesota Vikings this past season. I was on their practice squad. Wow. So, you know, I think we're a little bit different in that regard, but I think in general, all of it's good for football.
This is Jesse again, and just looking into it because I have a personal connection because I had about three or four buddies go play, and I'm kind of interested in it. Like, just looking at the growth of a game and reading about it the last day or two, I see you guys. How many camps do you guys think you put on a year, and do you guys have sponsorship for the camps? Because I saw your Instagram, it was very active with like kids camps and, you know, kids in the stands. So is that a major goal for the outreach, is running camps and going into schools and trying to get young kids to participate?
It definitely is. You know, our organization really, like I mentioned, is committed to three things. One is helping players and teams access equipment, you know, at low cost, tough to get equipment over here, often as a result of import taxes, long distance shipping, things like that. And so we help them access it at a reasonable price. Additionally, we have these camps, which you mentioned, which help develop the sport at a grassroots level, and our website, which is really focused on publishing content and information and resources and advice to players and coaches. So all three of those things, you know, the merchandise, the camps, the information, are all focused on developing the sport. And so one of the best ways that we've proven to do that is to have these camps that focus on development at a grassroots level, right? We bring in coaches from, oftentimes from the States, from all over Europe, to go coach at these camps and, you know, show them what we can do and give them access to high quality coaching. You know, oftentimes with players over here, you know, they'll play in a team which maybe has one or two, you know, quality coaches on the staff, but they don't have quality coaches at each position group. So we'll make sure we have minimum seven coaches, one for each position group at each camp. They get some real hands-on coaching opportunities with some really high-level coaches. And we've shown we've proved that that's the best way to really access and help these players develop. And, you know, we're doing upwards of 15 camps, perhaps more, in 2018. So, you know, we've been doing this for about 2 years now, and we're expanding quite a bit. And in terms of sponsors, we've been really fortunate. Our biggest sponsors is Battle Sports, which is a really up-and-coming sports brand, football brand, and they've really blown up here in Europe in a big way.
So what we're going to do is we're going to give you about 30 seconds, 35, 45 seconds for you to tell our listeners something about your company that you want everybody to know, how to support your company, how, you know, anything pertinent information you feel like our listeners need to know.
Well, you know, with the growth of the game, we're really focused on facilitating the development of American football in Europe. So any contact from anybody that's interested in helping to develop the sport abroad, anyone who's interested in potentially coaching or playing abroad, and, you know, is really potentially passionate about sharing the sport that they love with some pretty great people, you know, should contact us. You can access us directly at via the web at www.growthofthegame.com, and we'd be happy to hear from you. You can check out our content and publish articles regularly on the growth of the sport here, and you get to learn about some interesting teams and players and coaches, and we'd be happy to hear from you.
Oh, all right. Travis, we appreciate your time getting up. I know, what time is it over there, by the way?
Well, we just had a time change. It's 5:30 p.m. right now.
Good grief. Okay.
It's 5:30 p.m. Good grief.
All right. Well, Travis, we appreciate you coming on, and continued success.
Thank you, guys.
Now we're going to It's Whatever. And the top for It's Whatever, Steph Curry threw his fucking mouthpiece at a referee and did not get suspended whatsoever. So is that going to set a precedent? Like, what's going to happen?
My man Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick. Good God, I'm playing. Jeez, they got me hyped up. Colin Cowherd calls Steph Curry Steph Long Don.
Stephon Tom.
He's Stephon. He's untouchable. Nothing sticks to him, dog. Nothing.
Yo.
But this is all I want. I mean, hey. He's Steph. Refs didn't. He had thrown out, of course. But they didn't suspend him, fine him $50,000, whatever. I'm sure I'm going to pay that shit. I'm just waiting for a non-Steph Curry to throw that fucking mouth.
He's right. Ref.
And I just want to make sure he don't get suspended. That's it. If he don't get suspended, I'm all good with it. Let's all throw the fucking mouthpiece at the ref. Because if everybody can't throw the mouthpiece at the ref, it should be a suspendable offense, right? Yeah. So.
What kind of childish shit is that?
Yo, he got it. That's a serious.
Whoa.
Throw that fucking mouthpiece like that.
Well, let's just say this. NBA is here, so we're going to have some real NBA beef soon. Once, you know, football playoffs and everything wrap up. But MVPs have always played by different rules, you know?
That's true.
And it just goes back to the conversation we had, you know? When you the MVP, it's just like white people. You're on the top of the totem pole. And you just get away with certain shit.
I'm all good with getting away with it as long as the non-Steph don't get suspended for doing the shit.
It doesn't look good for the NBA, for their two-time MVP and their champ, the face of the... Who's arguably one of the faces of the league? LeBron is the face of the league, but LeBron is tier one. Everyone else is fighting for tier 1B. Mm-hmm. He's one of those 1B guys, and it just doesn't look good. But the NBA has always been one of them players' leagues. You know, unless you do some real wild shit, like go in the stands and beat up people, you're not getting suspended too much from the league. Teams suspend players, you know, and I'm sure the league would have wished the team would have handled it instead of the front office.
You'll hit a fan with the mouthpiece and the ref. That's crazy.
Emotion. You hit a fan with the mouthpiece.
Last year. Two years ago.
After that bad call.
2 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Okay, two years ago.
The year they won it, right?
The year they lost.
I mean, the year they lost.
Yeah. But, I mean, at the same time, just me playing devil's advocate. These games are games of emotion. You play with your heart. You play with passion. And passion leads to things like that sometimes.
Yeah, but it should be consequences.
Absolutely.
$50,000 ain't a consequence.
That's chump change.
That's like us paying a $5 speeding ticket fine.
No.
Who was he mad about?
Not $50,000 isn't $50,000.
NBA is so soft, yo.
$250 million.
So fucking soft. The NFL is going to become like the NBA.
It is tax deductible. So not.
They keep changing these rules.
No, it's not.
That's going to happen.
Well, somebody said $50,000 is $50,000. And yeah, I hear you, but let's put it like this. Let's put it in our perspective.
Yeah, $50,000.
If you
gotta cut the check for $50,000, that's $50,000.
It's gonna hurt, but
he ain't gonna never see that shit.
It is tax deductible. Yeah. I mean, but let's be real. If you go and spend $60 at an Outback meal, you're not worried about them $60 compared to somebody who's working at McDonald's. Oh, who spent that $60? That shit is cutting in there if the water bill's getting paid. That $50,000 that my man just lost ain't cutting in the shit. Like that $60 at Outback you gonna spend tonight.
That's different. That's different, Chief. Like I said, that $50, he not even seeing that. It's coming out the check
before you even see it. Right.
Like
right.
If somebody said, Steph, I need $50,000, and he's like, $50,000, right? Cutting a check for a millionaire, $50,000 is a lot of money. But if you never see it, you never fucking see it.
What about 200 millionaire? It's a difference between a millionaire and a 200 millionaire.
And like you said, he get to write off that shit.
He's going to get off.
20 of that shit back.
He going to get 90% of it back.
Change.
So, but hey, Steph, game of emotion, baby. And you let your emotions get the best of you. But I'm glad they didn't suspend you. Chalk one up for us winning one. You know? We needed a win.
Hell yeah.
So this was Sunday?
Yeah.
I think the game of the year, anticipation-wise, was last night. Ohio State versus Penn State.
Yep.
It was an awesome
game. It was a good game, man.
This how tied I am to my man James Franklin at Penn State. When I watched JT Barrett go 16 for 16 in them last drives. I just like watching greatness. So I'm not saying he's great, but that was a great drive. Like 100% is great in anybody's book. And he was 100% in them last drives. So I appreciated what I was watching. But when my man and Penn State took that L for like 30 minutes, dog, I felt like I lost that game, dog. I was down, dog. Like, oh my God. That's how emotional football is, man. When you get tied to a team, fan is what? Chauffeur fanatic, right? God damn, that shit hurt, dog.
That shit was crazy. That's where like they was connected on the same plays, same pass plays, yo.
That shit was amazing.
Like right behind the fucking linebackers, wide open.
Hey, you say all the championship throws are thrown behind the linebackers in front of the safeties.
And that shit was working, yo. He just, you can see JT Barrett just being patient. Yep. He about to clear him. Let me throw that bitch. Yep. Touchdown. That shit was crazy.
So my biggest worry going into the game was, would they be able to hold off that front for Ohio State? That's all D1 dudes. I mean, I'm sorry, first round dudes. Period. All of them going first round.
They definitely dominated. That's crazy. They definitely dominated that fourth quarter. Yo. And changed
it. Was insane. Yo, them DNs was eating that shit up.
I've been in situations where I was like, as a play caller, like, oh shit. It feel like I can't do nothing. Like, I've been in that situation. So I had all the empathy in the world for Coach Moorhead at Penn State. Like, no. It was nothing. As creative as he was all year, he had nothing.
And it's crazy to realize, like, as much as the game has evolved and how fancy it is, at the end of the day, if you can't get 4 yards of carry, running the ball, and power eye to close out a game, you ain't going to win a game. Like, and that's, like, it's crazy that how much, you know, new offenses and throwing the ball around. But at the end of the game, when you need to win and you got to line up and get 4+4+4, mm-hmm. and you don't get it, and it changed the game, football still at the end of the day is whose front is better than yours.
They stopped you without blitzing. Just four. Versus five.
How hype is Larry Johnson for that, though? Like how hype is he? Like, because he felt like that job should have been his, and a lot of people felt that way. You know, he did 20-plus years there, was the number one guy, was a great recruiter for them, got passed over once.
He was at Ogeron.
Then got passed over again.
He was at
And it was
Ogeron.
Like, you know what? I'm out of here. Like, that must – I know he woke up this morning Ed feeling good.
So if
Ogeron
was the white man was there, he should have got it. That's how you feel. Like, you're not more qualified as
a stay with the white man.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can say that, but he got passed.
You got to tell him what he said.
So somebody said he stayed for the white man and left for the black man. Well, yeah, you know it does look like
that. Wait a
minute,
you said it wrong. He stayed for the
white
man.
He stayed for the white man and left when the black man got the job.
Right.
So, I feel him. I feel where you coming from when you say that, Eugene, Reginald Eugene White.
Senior.
But, all right, I get it. The scandal happened. We need to pull somebody with a name. You know, and let's be real. Penn State ain't a black-friendly place.
I get you.
You know, when I went on my visit there, they had a huge, this was years ago, of course, 2001. They had a huge black student union interrupt the game. They ran in the middle of the field like, we don't get treated fairly, don't send your kids here. My mother was like, what the fuck? You ain't coming here. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, maybe his mindset was, well, I'm not going to get this job because I don't think they're ever going to give me one of them. But then when you've been there and you put in the work and then someone that does look like you is an outsider and gets the job, it's kind of a smack to the face. You know what I'm saying?
So then it's a smack to the face from the white man.
It definitely is a smack to the face after you put in 20 years. But the circumstances are different. They were trying to clean the image and clear house, but he was such a good coach that he was the only one that was held over.
Let's just go back to my formula. Larry Johnson thought he should get an interview on and should have gotten the job because of his tenure at Penn State. But if the rival Ohio State opened up, would he get an interview with Ohio State? The answer would be hell no. James Franklin would have got an interview with Ohio State.
That's just
the formula right there. If you can't even get an interview with the rival, what makes you think you're gonna do good here?
I agree.
That's my formula, dog. That just is what it is. And yeah, tenure means something and all that, but that's why they got assistant jobs. It just is what it is.
Well, I'm happy for him. I know he felt good. His D-line dominated.
They dominated, dog.
They upset the number two. I mean, I don't know how big of an upset it is because they were the favorite. But they beat the number two undefeated team in the country. Mm-hmm.
they back in it to win a Big Ten championship and go to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy for the dude. I feel bad for Penn State, though, because we close to him. Right. But I'm happy for Larry Johnson.
This is terrible. That hurt. I'm still feeling like, goddamn.
Yeah.
Like, my wife asked me a question, like, in the middle of the fourth quarter, and I just gave it a look of death, like, don't you see what the fuck I'm doing? Like, you don't see this?
You should be playing it.
We were just hoping to go to the Big Ten championship game, though. Like, we saw it, like, oh, no, it's slipping away. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good, though. That was a good game. Anybody see that new Stranger Things shit on Netflix?
I don't watch that shit.
I watched the first season. It's a good show. It's not the best, but it's
everybody
a
talking okay about show. It.
Everybody talking about this
I can't
season.
Even explain what the hell it's about. It's something about an alien invasion or something. Oh my God,
that's too much.
These children and something.
Yeah, I'm lost. Once you said that, I'm out of it.
Like, seriously, like, it's kind of confusing.
The only weird shit I'm into is Game of Thrones, so outside of that, I don't
so know. So is that over? It's no longer ever coming on again?
What, Game of Thrones? In like 2 years, yo.
Is it 18 or 19?
Some are saying 19, some are saying 18. No one knows.
So it's two more seasons.
It's one more season. Six or seven episodes left. They said they're shooting like four different endings, so no one will know.
Damn.
It's the most pirated show in TV history, and it still has the best viewers in HBO history.
It's just... I can't. Once I get past one episode, I'm sleepy as hell. Like, it's too much shit going on.
It is a lot. It is.
Like,
a lot.
I just be tired.
You have to
just
be attentive to bed.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm trying to cut through the dialogue.
It's not a common folk show. Shot. I'll be shot. Let me stop throwing shots. It's Sunday.
All right, man. I'm ready to get about it.
Yeah, me too. I'm ready to get about it.
All right, shout out the interview today. Hope you guys enjoyed it. It was cool. You know, football in Europe, that's definitely
good. Yo, one-on-one with
Warren Moon. Warren Moon. You know what, though, man? I ain't going to lie, man. Edwin Warren Moon said that shit about them dudes standing up for the flag and how Travis Early said they wouldn't even let him play quarterback because he was black. I'm like, why could you say that? So I'm kind of off of Warren Moon for a little bit, but I still respect him and who he is and what he's done. Shout out Warren Moon, but I can't believe... You talking about them guys shouldn't be protesting. Like, come on, my dude. You had to go play in cold-ass Canada because you look like us. Like, that's the only reason why. Like, because the way you look. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, come on, my dude. And Rich Eisen checked his ass on his show, too, when he said that shit. And I was like, wow. So, shout out, Rich. Shout out, Rich.
Did the Browns win today?
Rich invited to the cookout?
Rich might be able to come to the cookout. He ain't gonna be like the cool. I'm gonna make his ass sit in the corner and make him nervous a little bit. But he can come.
He gonna be the life of the cookout.
Hell yeah. Telling Stuart Scott stories. Mm-hmm. All right, Coach Harvest, running out of social media information.
All right, you can find social media on Twitter at @coaches_office, on Facebook at the Coaches Office Podcast. You can find some clips on YouTube at the Coaches Office Podcast. And you can find our show on Google Play, Podomatic.com, and iTunes. My personal Twitter is Coach_Hargis, H-A-R-G-I-S.
I'm Coach at, I'm sorry, dang, Trug at Coach_Trug on Twitter. Hit me up, man. I need some new people to follow, man. I'm on this anti-celebrity follow Twitter mess. Like, I don't like following.
Do you follow the elite of black Twitter? The elite of black Twitter?
Who is that?
What is that?
Who's that?
Oh, man, y'all guys don't follow, like, Officially Ice and I Don't Wear Condoms and those dudes like that. That shit makes Twitter amazing.
I'm not following no dude, man. I don't wear condoms.
Oh, shout out them dudes on Twitter because black Twitter is amazing.
Like I said,
it's the culture.
Regular folk. That's not a regular
They regular thing. Folks like us that just talk shit on Twitter. But anyway, my Twitter is Jesse_cheese. And I'm sorry that we always talking about, you know, how the white man ain't shit, what's going on today, because we really want to come on here and talk about sports, but god damn, this is all they talk about every day, and it's emotional and it gets to me, and this is my platform to say something. So hopefully next week we can talk all sports.
I'm Greg Watkins 830 on Twitter, DJ Greg 1200 on Instagram and Snapchat and all that good stuff. All right, I'm going home because I'm sleepy. All right. We out. Till next week. Peace.